Good evening, everybody. Good afternoon in the States, and a very warm welcome to BBS Radio. This is John Campbell with Miracle Hour, welcoming our listeners all over the world. And it's a little bit of a different time I'm on now. It's I guess it must be 2 p.m. over there in the U.S. of A. And this afternoon, it's a great pleasure for me to have a wonderful woman on the show today. Because I was thinking about this term, which is used a lot, you know, about free spirits, people who are free spirits, you know, and I certainly have always been a free spirit. I thought I was a very free spirit until I met our guest today, and her name is Penny Wilmot, and she's a very dear friend, and she's had quite a journey, and she's going to share with us today her experiences. She's a qualified journey therapist, she's a reflexologist, she's all sorts of things, but she's done so many things, and she really has embraced the concept of spirit and continual learning, which of course, this is what the journey is, I think, is a continual journey of learning. And she's also, I know her to be a very dedicated student of A Course in Miracles. And she's going to talk to us today about how she found that and her experiences with that. So Penny, it's wonderful to have you on the show. Can you hear me there?
Yes, John, I can hear you really well. Yes, it's good to be here.
Yeah, it's good to have you on the show. Thank you for giving up your time. And what have you been at today?
I've been with a friend today.
Have you?
We've been out walking on the beach and just connecting.
Wow. So... What I like to do with my guests is to just start off by, you know, telling us a little bit about you, how you grew up, and then eventually what was the point of view where you kind of started to awaken to those three questions which I always talk about, which people seem to ask sooner or later in their life, which is, there must be more than this. Why am I, you know, why am I here, and who am I really? So... fire away. Let's hear about what you how you came to those things, Penny.
Well, I was brought up pretty conventionally. My parents were farmers in East Anglia here in the UK, and we moved about a bit, which is unusual for farmers. But so I had a fairly conventional upbringing. I got married very young and had my children very young. And actually, one of the first things I was introduced to was transcendental meditation when I was about 25.
Okay.
And so that was, I think that was probably my first introduction to anything spiritual, really, you know, on a sort of conscious
level. How did you come across that, Penny?
That was quite extraordinary, really. It was our local GP.
Wow.
They must have been very enlightened.
That's unusual. Explain to our listeners what a GP is, because I think a lot of
a doctor, general practitioner in the UK, and you know, an ordinary medical doctor. And they had spent some time in India, so they had come across this. And actually, our whole family took part and learned transcendental meditation, TM. Unfortunately, I didn't really keep it up. I used it in times of difficulty and trauma in my life. It was always something to fall back on, but it wasn't something.
And when was this, Penny? What year would this have been?
If I remember correctly, about 1975, 1976, somewhere around.
So this would have been the time when, because the Beatles got into it very big time.
That's right.
With Maharishi.
It must have been around about that time. And I had no idea, though, at that time, quite what it was. You know, I didn't. I knew it was helpful, and it was very relaxing, and it certainly helped in times of stress. But I had really no depth of understanding of what exactly what I was taking part in.
And when you learned that, because I mean I also did TM, and I found it similarly helpful, but like some of the things I didn't keep it up, but it is something which once you've had it, you get your mantra, don't you? And you can go back and do kind of refreshers, but it's something that I fall back on, you know, from time to time.
From time to time, time, yeah.
And did they used to do this in the clinic, or what happened?
No, she used to have the classes at their home.
Ah, okay.
It was quite a revelation, really, because I remember there was a very elderly man there, and he suffered very badly with asthma, and his breathing was very, very bad. But as soon as she led us into the meditation, he breathed really easily, and there was no sound. And he wouldn't believe us when we told him that the whole time he was meditating, he was breathing perfectly easily. It was quite funny. Although he was taking part in it, he was still doubting.
Yeah.
But it really did work. It enabled him to breathe really easily. So it's an amazing process.
Yeah, and it's interesting, isn't it, that you had no other introduction to anything spiritual. You just from a traditional kind of what were your parents? What did they were they Christian, Baptist, or what were they?
Yes, Christian Church, C of E, Church of England.
Just regular Church of England, yeah. Yeah, Christian.
Yeah, yeah. So they didn't have they weren't high church or strict. We didn't have to go to church every Sunday. And I always remember looking upon having to go to church as an absolute pain, because I'd have to get out of my jeans and...
get dressed up.
And get dressed up, yeah.
Yes.
to go to church.
And did your parents join you in this TM with the doctor?
Oh, yes, they did.
Wow,
yes, they did. There was my mother and father, my husband, myself, my sister, and my brother-in-law.
That's quite a thing for you all to do that. I would think that's quite it must have been an amazing experience, because presumably, if you were like most of our families, pretty sort of separate within the unit, that's quite a thing to all get together and do something like that, and quite bonding, I would think.
It was. Looking back, it was quite an extraordinary thing, really, for us all to decide to do together. And it was bonding, and I think that all of us used it from time to time, and like you, we didn't actually keep it up. And I do remember that somebody introducing some thought, how do you know when you're meditating that there aren't going to be negative thoughts coming in and leading you off in some direction that could be harmful. And that often seems to be the case, doesn't it? People who don't understand come up with some idea that there could be some negative link.
Yeah, well, I suppose so, yeah. I think that's... That, from what I remember by TM, was that they kept emphasizing the fact that thoughts will come up, but just let them bubble up to the surface.
That's
and
right.
Just observe them.
These were other people who hadn't actually taken part,
And how long did you continue that for, Penny?
I suppose I must have... I probably only continued it for about a year. But I would always, whenever any difficulties came up, or stressful times, when any of the children were ill, particularly ill, and when I was got divorced, I would always fall back on it. And as far as I know, my ex-husband still does. It's something that we didn't do regularly, but it was there to fall back on.
Wow.
For us to connect to something, to help us get through the difficult times.
And at this time, were you working at anything, or were you a full-time mum?
Full-time mum. I had four children.
Right. Oh, okay. So you didn't have time.
I was very lucky. I didn't actually have to go out to work as well and look after the children.
Yeah. And then what was the next sort of stage of learning that you went through?
Well, apart from the dramas and traumas of bringing up the children, nothing really on the spiritual side particularly, and I suppose we're talking here, the TM was about 1975-76, probably not for the next 20 years really.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was in a relationship that wasn't working out, and I was also being made redundant from the job I had at the time. And I realised that I needed to do something different with my life. I had no idea where this feeling came from, and I think it was helped along by this, the fact that the relationship was proven to be very difficult to bring to an end. But I decided to go to Italy for the summer and work as a nanny for a family.
Whereabouts was that?
That was in on the Adriatic coast, just south of Rimini, near Seneca.
Oh, I see. So you just up and went abroad, huh?
Yeah, I went abroad to Italy, yeah.
Oh, wow. And so you had the four kids at this time?
Oh, yes, they'd grown up by then. Yeah, they were all...
Oh, right, okay, they were all grown up, okay. Yeah, and you went and worked to the... I mean, that must have been a big step after having, you know, raised all your own children and probably... It probably was part of you that felt you were ready to get free, were you?
Well, yes, but this was. I mean, it was an amazing job because I was looking after three children, but my job was to take them to the beach every day. So it was. I had a car to take them, and that was my job. We had a housekeeper and a cook, and that was my job. So it seemed like a gift, you know.
Wow, that was amazing. How long did you
And it
do
was,
that?
Yeah.
And how long did you spend doing that?
The beautiful part about it was that the mum of the children, Jackie, she was quite a spiritual being, and she gave me a book to read while I was there, and the book was called Talking to Heaven by Jane Sanfar.
Jane Sanfar? Oh,
yeah. Have you come across her?
Yeah, no, I haven't. I mean, I've heard of James Van Prague, obviously I've met him, but I haven't read that book, no.
Oh,
so this would have been, what, in the 90s now?
Yeah, this was 1998.
Right.
And
so she gave you this book to read, and up until that time, had you had any belief in the afterlife and spirit and... You know,
I think that I probably always had that belief. I think it was something that I carried with me all my life, and at some point during this time I remembered an occasion when I was about 10 of looking in a mirror and looking at my reflection in the mirror and hearing a voice or having some feeling within me that although I was looking at this reflection, my face in the mirror, that it wasn't who I am. That I inside of me could have chosen to be in any body. But
right.
For some reason I had chosen this body.
Mm.
I don't remember going any further with that, but I was And I think that was with me. I think that somewhere along that belief and that understanding had been with me all my life because I'd always been optimistic, you know, no matter what happened.
Mm.
I always had this feeling that there was some message within what happened or a gift. Maybe not as consciously as that, but something that I'd had one or two. One of my children was very ill when she was born and spent the first 10 weeks in hospital, and then. And my fourth child actually was born with congenital heart disease and he died at 18 months old. And
oh
I think somehow along the line, this belief that I had that there was something more than just this body enabled me to somehow come through those experiences, I don't know, more positively perhaps.
Yeah. So how old was your child when the child died, Penny?
He was 18 months old.
18 months, I mean, that must be a traumatic experience. And where was he in the list of your children? In the, you know, were all the other children already born?
Pardon?
The other children were already born. Was he the last born?
Yeah, he was the fourth. He was the fourth one.
Right. Wow.
And then we had Tim after Ben.
So that must have been a real shock, a mean trauma within the whole family unit.
Yes, it was, and I mean, to be honest, when I look back at the whole thing, it's very hazy now. you know, to how I coped and how I dealt with it. I remember always having this belief that he wasn't meant to be here, and that the people would keep reassuring me, well, you know, it's not that serious an operation, the heart. He was born with congenital heart disease.
Mm-hmm.
And yet somehow I think I knew that he wasn't meant to be here for very long.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't stop the pain or the hurt or the grief or the anger that I felt at God initially that, you know, this was happening.
Yeah. Yeah, that must have been a massive, massive trauma for you. And then did that lead you into sort of some more exploration or what happened?
Well, this was all about the time of when we did the TN, actually, because Ben died in 1976, so it was all about round about that same time,
right.
Which was, and of course the TN came in, was very helpful at that time.
Yeah, yeah. Wow, so then in 98 you say you were given this book when you were working in Rimini, and did you read it at the time, or...?
Yes, I read it.
I guess that must have given you some comfort, huh?
Oh, yes, absolutely. It really, really did, and it really inspired me because I then realised that I wanted to be more in touch with that part of me. And so I resolved that I was no longer going to be working in an office or doing that sort of work, but I wanted to become some kind of therapist, you know, a complementary therapist. So when I came back from Italy, I spent the next 2 or 3 months, you know, researching exactly what it was that I wanted to do and speaking to different people and reading books and contacting different teachers, and I decided upon reflexology.
Right.
And so that was my first training, really.
And did you go straight into full-time training to be a reflexologist at that time?
Well, I did sort of the research towards the end of 1998 and signed up in 1999 to begin the year's training. And it's part-time training, so it was like we'd have home study stuff to do and then a weekend, about every 6 weeks, a weekend in London. But also what I did was Jackie asked me to go back to Nanny again for the following summer, which I did, and she then gave me on the second summer the Journey by Brandon Bowes to read.
Oh, my goodness me.
And that really did blow my mind, because the Journey is a process of whereby you access memories that have been stored in the cell, so it's a healing using the cellular memory, and for some reason or other I just absolutely connected with that and just had the whole belief that this was what I wanted to investigate and to find out more about.
So you signed up and attended a Journey intensive, though?
Yeah, but I didn't do that for about 2 years. It's funny, it because several of the weekends coincided with my reflexology training, I wasn't actually able to do it until 2001. But coincidentally, synchronistically, when I came back from Italy that year, I went to a mind-body-spirit healing show in my local town and came across a Journey therapist there, which was extraordinary because you talk about, you know, Norwich, the capital city of Norfolk, but still very small. And here was a Journey therapist, you know, 6 weeks after I'd read the book, there he was.
so you were able to get some information firsthand?
Yes, speak to him firsthand and actually do a Journey process with him.
I see. You had one, you were a participant in...
I was a client, yes,
initially. Right. Oh,
and
yeah.
It was extraordinary, yeah. So that was really my first. I suppose that was where I felt I discovered a deeper connection to something.
Yeah.
You know, and when I went on the Journey workshop with Brandon, I just had this belief that this was the direction that I really needed to go next.
And even though we didn't know each other then, we were on the same weekend workshop.
We were.
Right. I can't remember the name. Where was it? That was the Commonwealth House Buildings or something, wasn't it, in London?
Yeah, at Commonwealth Institute.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. There must have been about 400 people on that, wasn't there?
Yes, there was. There was a lot of people on that one. There was. Yeah, there was. Yeah, it was amazing.
And then after you finished that, you were so inspired, you went on to do the training, I understand.
Yes, I did. I did the training 2002.
Yeah.
The whole of 2002 was really very much taken up with the journey, because once you've done a workshop, you can then go back to help at the next ones as a trainer, and so that was what I did, and met some wonderful friends there. Actually, in fact, I met the wonderful lady, Miggy, who introduced us later on.
It is incredible how these workshops, you know, people, relationships are made on them. I mean, I don't know, my memory of that journey weekend intensive is pretty good, but I just remember that we were mainly pairing up with other participants, weren't we, to the training, you know. And I guess that was pretty early on in the journey, wasn't it, before it had become, because now it's a massive, massive organisation, isn't it?
Oh, it's a huge organisation. I mean, in South Africa, Australia, and I think it's becoming bigger in the US now. It is, and Brandon does amazing things in South Africa. In fact, it's been incorporated into the schools in South Africa. I think Nelson Mandela got involved, and it's a huge concern. And it was quite early days then.
So they've actually brought it into the schools in South Africa. So they do journeys for the kids, huh?
Yes, for the kids. It's absolutely amazing. She's done so much work in Durban, in the ghettos. It's helped so much there.
Yeah. No, I understood that she did a lot of voluntary teaching down there, and it's really gone widespread. So that was what now 2002, I guess, was it?
2002.
And then. By this time, presumably, you'd done quite a few journey processes, so you started to open up and do some healing on your own past, you know, your childhood stuff.
Yeah, that's right, John. That's the wonderful part, and part that I loved about the whole journey accreditation, is that you know, Brandon's very clear, you need to clear a lot of your own stuff before really you can work with people.
Yeah.
Because when you're working with people on that level, you know, whatever your issues are that you're carrying, those buttons are going to get pressed by, you know, the client that's there in front of you.
That principle is so crucial, isn't it? We talk about it a lot. I've talked about it on this show, about this concept of healer, heal thyself. It's, you know, when you get unhealed healers in the healing thing, it just doesn't work. So I think that's great that she encourages that, and most of these good trainees do encourage that, because you just simply can't help anybody past the point that you've helped yourself.
That's right, and so that year was you know, a huge year really for bringing up our own issues and looking at them, and you know, through the journey process itself. It was amazing year.
So then what was the next stage?
Well, I was then married for the second time during all of this, and my second husband was supportive, very supportive initially, but then for some reason he felt that the journey was taking up a lot of my time, and he started to back off and back away. And I think this is what happens, you know, when we go through big life changes ourselves. It changes the energy of sometimes it can do change our, you know, our perception of our relationships, and changes the energy within the relationship. And unfortunately, I had to make the decision, you know, do I go with what I feel to believe is true for me, or do I try to stay in this relationship? And in the end, you know, we agreed that, to part, unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, as you say, though, Penny, it's so common it happens, doesn't it, when there's a big shift in one partner. And you know, if the other partner is open and you know, is eager to learn as well, it can work. But it's a very common thing, and I think that's basically what people in the spiritual world anyway don't believe marriage is something you're tied into for life. You know, you're there for a learning process, aren't you?
That's right, and I think that the beautiful part about it was that because of so much of the things that I've been taught, I hope that I was able to let that all go with love.
Yeah.
It was the whole process was very, very different from my first divorce, and we did come to an understanding even though obviously there was angst and there was a lot of emotion in it at times, the whole thing seemed to unfold with a whole different energy. And we did actually meet up again and spend some time together. It still wasn't going to work, but we were able to go through the whole divorce thing and still stay friends through it.
Well, that's fantastic, because that's really what it is, isn't it? If you can do that, it's such a blessing for everybody involved in the families, you know.
Yeah, absolutely, it is. It does make all the difference to everyone involved.
So we're on BBS Radio here. This is John Campbell and Penny Wilmot, my guest today. And if there's anybody there waiting to talk and wanted to ask Penny any questions. The numbers are there on the website, and Penny's talking about her experiences. So you left your second marriage, and then you spread your wings even further, I believe.
Well, I did, yes, thanks to you, John. In 2004, the divorce was going through, and I went to Adoring Virtue workshop with Miggy, our mutual friend, and she introduced us there, I believe, didn't she, John?
She did, that's right, she did. And it was as though we've known each other 1,000 years or 1,000,000 years. Did we go for a meal? I think we went for a meal somewhere, didn't we? And
we did. There were several of us, I think. And you told us about your vision for the school and the school in India, the KPM school.
Yep.
And we talked a lot about that. I remember thinking, gosh, this sounds fascinating. And what a wonderful idea.
Yeah, and I think I spoke to you about the Hoffman process as well.
The Hoffman process, yes, you definitely did.
And what did you do?
My next adventure.
So that was one weekend, and then you went away and signed up, I believe.
Yeah, I did. I decided that the Hoffman was for me. This was the next thing that I needed to do. And the Hoffman process was absolutely extraordinary, and I just wish I could go back and do it all again and not know what was coming.
Yeah.
It was 8 days of an emotional roller coaster, but I've never felt so safe and so loved in all my life, actually, as those 8 days, and I've made some wonderful friends as a result of that, and several of us stay in contact and meet up. It was extraordinary.
Yeah, it is an amazing. I mean, you know, it's. I mean, so many people talk about it, and there's a lot of, big name stars have done the process. And to me, Penny, it's unique in as much that it kind of covers every aspect. You know, it's the most complete piece of work that I've ever experienced, you know, even though I've gone on to have, you know, other learnings and all the rest of it. But for actually completing all the different areas of your life, I mean, you get to look at your life under the most powerful microscope I've ever, you know, experienced, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. And I think during the whole process, you receive such insights into, you know, what drives you, what is actually been your path, where a lot of your issues have come from, and you get such insights and understanding into your parents. And I think that's a beautiful thing. And there were so many things that I knew on some level about my parents, and yet during the process is seeing it in a totally different way, and it changes your whole perception of your relationship with your parents, I believe.
Yeah,
this is how I
yeah.
found it. Both my parents, unfortunately, both died. They were no longer here with us.
Yeah,
and
well,
I remember being sorry, you know, about that. That I wasn't actually able to speak with them afterwards, face to face. But what I did actually, I went to their grave, and they have a double grave, and I sat on their grave for about 2 hours and spoke to them afterwards.
Yeah,
it was amazingly healing.
Yeah. Well, I can relate to that. Sorry?
It's a beautiful, beautiful experience. The whole thing of the husband is wonderful.
Yeah, and I can relate to what you're saying, you know, because my parents had also both passed away a long time before I did the process. But I did exactly the same after I finished. I went to the crematorium and sort of, you know, created a garden of remembrance for them, you know, to really anchor that forgiveness, you know. And the fantastic thing was coming out of there and feeling that they were both equal in my life, whereas I'd gone through my whole life from a child all the way through to 51 years of age, you know, demonizing my mother and canonizing my father, you know. So there was this tremendous imbalance within me, you know. And that's what the Hoffman did for me, was to repair that imbalance so that I saw them both as equals for the first time in my life.
Wow, that's fantastic, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a very
special thing. I think for me as well, it was probably the first thing that I did that was just for me. The other things I'd done had been wonderful, and I had dealt with a lot of issues as a result. But I was also training to be a therapist as well. Whereas for the Hoffman process, I was the client, if you like, and you know, the teachers were there for me, and so that was 8 days that was devoted just purely for me to look at my own stuff.
Yeah, and it's remarkable the community that builds up from that piece of work, isn't it? You
know, it really is, and you know, our group's met up several times, and one of my closest friends I met actually during that Hoffman process, and.
Yeah,
it is, because you share things on such a deep level, you know.
Yeah, absolutely, and it's still growing, you know. I mean, I think it was in about 13 countries around the world when I did it, you know. It's been going since 1965, and now I believe Tim Lawrence has taken it out to either Saudi Arabia or Bahrain in the Middle East, and to do that work in those areas is such an amazing accomplishment. I really, you know, I'm absolutely in awe of that fact that they've gone out there and started the Hoffman process amidst that area. It's just incredible.
Yes, I agree. Yeah, I think, is it Bahrain where they're doing it?
It's
extraordinary when you think of the cultural differences there. To be doing that work is wonderful.
Well, that's the other wonderful thing about it. It doesn't even really matter what your religious leanings are. I mean, they've had Roman Catholic priests do it, they've had nuns do it, they've had rabbis do it, they've had, you know, every nomination under the sun, do that piece of work, and it's just, it's a universal healing.
Well, it is universal healing. It's not about religion, is it? It's about,
not at all.
You know, it's about our spirituality, who we are, rather than being influenced by any religious belief at all.
And then when you eventually come out of Hoffman, I think, if I remember rightly, you came down to a talk that I was delivering down in a church in Brighton about the KPM approach to children, this amazing educational model which I came across and found in India, in Kerala. And that was it. You were sold on that too.
That's right. I think the Hoffman process for me was the deciding thing. Yes, I was going to make this big step and go to India, because I remember calling you and saying, I know you're only going to take 8 people, but is there any, have you got the 8? Is there room for one more?
That's right. And I think what we did, we just said, come on, get on down there. And I can't remember, how many did we start off with there when you went down so to Kerala?
There was nine.
There was 9, yeah, okay.
There was nine of us, and the 2 children.
9 plus the 2 children, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was quite an ordeal and an eye-opener and a very enlightening time for you, I guess.
Yes, it was. I felt like I continued with the Hoffman process when I got there. The Hoffman process opened the door, and going to Kerala in India was still stepping through it, I think.
It was a wonderful
experience going to India and being in Kerala. I was actually there for 8 months, and it was absolutely awesome. I loved Kerala. I loved the people, and the experience is just something that, you know, you just feel so privileged to have been part of, really.
Yeah. Oh, that's wonderful. And it was quite a mixed bunch of trainees we had down there, different age groups, different sort of spiritual levels of learning, and, you know. So it was quite an achievement, I think. A great credit to all of you for the fact that you managed to keep stuck in there until, you know, some people just felt it was time to come back. And I think you went to explore India as well, didn't you?
Yes, we did. Yeah, my daughter came over, actually, and we went and explored sort of more north, and we went to Goa for a while, and, yeah, we had quite some experiences out there. And for me, there's nowhere quite like Kerala, really. Goa is lovely, but Goa's not really the true India. Kerala is beautiful, and the people in Kerala are so very warm and friendly. It's very different to the north of India.
And was this the first time you'd ever been to India?
Yes, it was. Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
That's why I wanted to get this, you know. This woman's a real free spirit.
Sorry, John?
I'm just saying to our listeners there that you're such a free spirit. You know, the minute you're moved to go somewhere, it's like, bang, you're gone. You know, and I really admire that about you. Fantastic.
Well, I really do, I think, have a belief that when something presents itself to you as an opportunity and you can do it, then, you know, why not? Several people said to me, you know, you're so brave, it must take such courage, you know, go to India. But it didn't feel brave to me. It felt like, well, this is the next step that I need to take. You know, I felt I was being guided to go, and everything had fallen into place for it to happen, and it just seemed a natural step.
Yeah. And
I have to admit, when they met me at the airport, and Joy met me in the taxi at the airport to drive me back to the school, and I sat in the back of that big Jeep thing, and I almost had to pinch myself. Look, you know, you're driving through the Indian countryside, and there's the women working in the paddy fields, and, you know, you've just about got a tarmac road, and, you know, how did I actually get here?
Yeah. Yeah, because it's a, what is, you fly into Cochin, didn't you?
Yeah, I flew into Cochin, yes, and the school sent the car to meet me, and it was wonderful.
And what is the basis of the KPM approach? Would you like to share that with our listeners?
Yes, the basis of the KPM approach really is to, it's to honour the spirit of the child, really, and to it's rather than being academically led, it's led by the child. The child learns at their own pace, and the principle is not ever to make them feel wrong or to make them feel put down in any way. Then they learn at their own speed. So they're offered activities and learnings in all the different, you know, in the humanities and maths and writing and reading. That they will offer activities within each of the academic groups, and they choose which ones appeal to them. And because they're not forced to learn, they want to learn. And I really have the belief that all children have a desire to learn. You know, from the time they're born, they're learning, and it's something that's innate in all of us.
Absolutely.
And unfortunately, our education systems in, well, probably all over the world, feel that we have to sit children down and make them learn. And I think that, you know, we're in great danger of squashing their desire to learn, because it's there naturally in them. You know, they learn to use a knife and fork and you know, copy what's going on around them. We all learn automatically. And I think if you can learn from, you know, you progress from your own desire to learn, then you learn more quickly. And,
absolutely.
You know, then your learning stay with you.
Yeah.
Instead of sitting children down and making them do this and making them do that, it's killing their own desire to learn. And the
it shuts them down. It cuts their creativity down, doesn't it?
It does. It does. It just spoils us. It does stuff their own creativity down.
The
KPM approach encourages, you know, their own discoveries, and making their own discoveries for themselves.
Yeah.
And encourages their creativity and the freedom.
Because interestingly, one of your sisters homeschooled her children, didn't she?
My sister homeschooled all four of her children.
And in turn, they've grown up and homeschooled theirs, haven't they?
Yes, her eldest daughter has two children, and she's also homeschooling.
Yeah. And I was privileged to meet those two children, and I mean, it's just an incredible experience. I mean, you know, just wonderful beings of light with such the freedom and expression and the openness of them. You know, it's sad to say, it's very marked difference to how I experience many, not all, but many children who are educated within the state system. You know, where they're closed down and they have to comply with, you know, very strict conditions, and their spirit is somehow just dampened, I think.
Yes, I think you're right, John, and I know my four children were schooled conventionally, and I feel that children that have been homeschooled, a great number of them have a self-confidence and a greater belief in themselves than the children that have been through conventional education, unfortunately.
Yeah, it is an amazing, I mean, the KPM approach, I've seen nothing like it anywhere else in the world. It really does really take to the extreme, you know, commitment to honouring that child and getting into the child's world, as you said, and not expecting the child to get into the adult's world. And it might well be worth just stating that anybody who's interested, it's a fascinating and fabulous way of educating children. So they have their own website. It's called the mine of information about the school in India, which is where the first school started, and it's been going now, what, 26 years, Penny? Must be 26 years now.
Must be something like that now.
Yeah. And there is one other school in Austin, in Texas, which replicated the KPM approach, and it's very, very successful. And they must be either just had or coming up to their first graduation year, which is fantastic. So, you know, many people who made comments like, oh, well, it's okay, you know, that wouldn't work in the West. You know, that can work in India, but we're different in the West. Well, it's been proved it works anywhere, because it doesn't depend on facilities or culture or whatever. It all depends on that relationship with a child, between the teacher and the child, and it's a fantastic, fantastic model for the rest of the world. So when you were down in India, I think if I remember rightly, you virtually fell in love with India and decided to come back there, and you actually came back to England first, didn't you?
Yes, I came back to England and spent some time with my daughter. I actually had, when I left for India in 2004 and my husband and I split up, we sold the house. And so when I came back from India, all my furniture was in storage, or all my belongings were in storage, and actually they still are. I've never taken them out, and I haven't actually, since I came back, had a place of my own as such to take them to.
It's a marvellous feeling, isn't it?
It's very free. It's wonderful. I mean, I have many wonderful friends, and I have family, and I did have a room in a friend's house for a year or so, which I used as a base. But it's quite incredible how you can actually be without, an actual fixed base.
Well, it's amazing, really. I think especially for a woman, where your, you know, society kind of, you know, conditions you to believe that that's your place in the home and all the rest of it. So for you to let go, and I've done the same thing, so I know how you feel. Let go of that pseudo security, I would call it. I think that's a great name, especially having found the Course in Miracles. That pseudo security of the house. And then just trust that there'll always be a place for you. It's amazing. It takes a lot of courage, Penny.
Yes, I suppose it does. And again, it's a bit like people saying, well, it was very brave and courageous to go to India. It doesn't really feel that way. It just feels as though that's how it needs to be, and that's where I need to be at this time. You know.
Yeah.
I feel very much that I'm guided to be where I'm meant to be, and normally wherever it is that I'm meant to be, there's somebody there, something comes up, something happens, and I think, oh yes, this is why I'm here at this time. And I think that, you know, home is wherever you are. And I think this is something that I've been blessed with this feeling that I'm happy and I can feel at home anywhere.
Yeah, well,
I believe it's within me, you know.
Yeah, I can relate to that. And did you feel when you were growing up, did you feel this common sort of feeling that you didn't fit in, and, you know, you felt a bit different to others? Or?
Yes, I do really do believe that I did. I really couldn't understand what all the fuss was about. I can remember my mother, you know, saying to me, I really don't understand what's going on with you, and if you don't behave, we'll send you away to boarding school. But I never knew what it was that I'd done. It was like, oh, I don't understand this, I'm just being me.
Yeah, that's it.
Sure I didn't do anything horrendous.
No, but it's
before, I just didn't understand.
It's a big challenge to people, isn't it? When you have that free-spirited nature, people pick it up, I've found anyway. And for those who haven't kind of stepped out and explored with that, it's quite challenging to be around, I think.
Yes, I think it is. I think, to be perfectly truthful with you, I think I stuffed it down for a big part of my life, you know, and decided that I had to conform somewhere along the line. And I think that probably it happened because I was actually pregnant when I got married the first time. I was expecting the baby, and my parents were so horrified. And I think for the next, probably the next 20 years, I just decided that, well, I was just going to have to conform and try and make up in some way for what I appeared to have done, you know.
Right.
But you can't stay in that place because it's not been true to who you are.
No. Well, that's what I always say. I think what happens is once we have kind of given the message that we are ready to find another way or find out who we really are or find out what our purpose is, once we've made those kind of questions or we've created those questions in our mind, which is really putting it out there, there is no turning back, is there? And then it's like, if we do not follow what's in our heart, if we do not leave a relationship which we're not happy in or do something about it or leave a job that we're not happy in and get out of it, if we don't take the action, my experience is what happens is it gets harder to do. The universe creates situations that make life harder still, I think, to keep making us feel discomfort, you know, that we take a step and move away.
Yes, I think that's very true, and I think it's the most powerful thing really to when you actually come to the understanding that actually I can make some changes here, you know. It's no one else is going to do this for me, it's actually down to me.
Yeah.
And every single one of us can do this. We all have a choice, and sometimes life gets very hard and very difficult, and you really do believe that we're trapped and controlled.
Oh.
But sometimes you just have to step out of it and just try something a little bit new and take a little bit of courage and try something new. And we all have that power, and we all have that choice.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, I can remember when I first was invited to consider the concept that I always have a choice. Always, I have a choice in every single second of my life, you know. And there's nothing I have to do, and nowhere I have to be, and you know, that was such a challenge for me at the beginning. I kept thinking, well, this is crazy. Of course, I haven't got a choice. I have to do this. Or I have to do that. So it's quite a massive shift when people first make that.
Yes.
So, Penny, what did you do then? I'm trying to remember, how did you come across A Course in Miracles?
Well, again, that was, you introduced me to Gary Reynard's book, The Disappearance of the Universe. I mean, you've been a very pivotal person in my life and my spiritual journey and awakening. And that was about two years ago now.
Yeah, and I can't remember how. I mean, thank you for that, and it's been a real pleasure to be that. And I think we all have someone who is our sort of guide, if you like, to this. But I'm just trying to remember what happened, because I learned about Gary's book, Disappearance of the Universe, via Wayne Dyer. And I think maybe what I used to do is just buy a box of these things and give them away to friends. So I don't know whether I gave a copy to you, or did you just hear of it from me? And
no, what happened, I think we went to Lee Jampolsky's workshop.
Oh, that's right, we did, down in Dane Hill there, yes.
Yeah, that's right, and they had the book on sale there.
Yeah.
And you said, Penny, if you don't read anything else, you must read this book, Disappearance of the Universe.
Yeah.
And it's all about The Course in Miracles. And I had come across The Course in Miracles because another close friend of mine was always carrying a copy, but I had no curiosity as to what this book actually was, and so I looked at The Disappearance and saw The Course in Miracles, and I thought, well, if one leads to the other, perhaps I better buy them both. and so I did, and since then, that's been the guide for my life, really. Slowly I got into the course, so reading the Gary's book. Just, well, the first time I read it, I thought, oh my, I'm going to have to change my whole idea about how the world works now. and put it down and thought, oh, Lord, do I pick it up again and continue reading, or do I just forget? But somehow I couldn't forget, and it's just led me to really to where I am now, and an amazing place of just trust, you know, trusting and trusting in God, that God is there, that Jesus and the Holy Spirit are talking to me, and will be with me and guide me to where I need to be.
Yeah. And that you can let go of all the old guilt and shame and all the rest of those things that we came in with. That we can just know that it never happened. It's all an illusion, and that's why it's coming so far. But it's a bit more than that, of course. It really is. But it is an amazing, amazing piece of work. And you know, I just I'm very grateful to have you as a co-facilitator in learning this work, because it makes such a help when you're working with somebody else who's studying the course.
That's right, and I'm equally grateful to you, John, because it really is important, I feel, to be able to have people who understand exactly what it is that you're talking about.
Yeah.
And where you're coming from, and you can bounce things off and can help you with some areas, you know, that may seem a little bit difficult for whatever reason, but I think it's the most important thing for me is the validation, you know, in the whole belief system.
Yeah.
To be able to speak to somebody on that level that actually understands where you're coming from.
Yeah.
And is very, very important.
Yeah, it certainly is, because it is, as everyone who knows A Course in Miracles, it is, it's very simple, and that doesn't mean it's easy. It's one of the most, challenging concepts that I've ever come across. But the results are enormous. The rewards are fantastic, and it stirs up the pot. But I'm really grateful to have found it, and the thing it did for me was to end my searching. And I think that's what it a lot of people find when they find the course. They think, oh, that's it. Now I understand this. It ticks all the boxes and it's got everything. So
well, yeah, anyway. That's what I was saying to my friends today, you know, that I didn't even understand that I was searching, but having now got the Course of Miracles in my life, I realised that there is no searching anymore, you know. This is making my life complete, that connection.
Well, Penny, I am absolutely amazed again, because it's just flown by and we're up. Time is up for us, so I wanted to...
Oh my goodness.
It's just incredible how quickly it's gone, and I wanted to thank you for giving up your giving us your precious time and for coming and sharing so openly with our listeners. It's a great pleasure. You're a wonderful being of light. You're very loved, and I love you, and Mary, my wife, loves you, and there's many, many, many other people we know in our group, and I honor the way you walk the talk. So thank you so much for coming on the show, and I look forward to hearing from you again very soon.
Well, thank you, John, and I send my love back to all of those wonderful people that are in my life.
Thanks very much, Penny, and God bless you, and we'll speak very soon.
Yeah, thanks, John. God bless.
Take care. Bye now.
Bye. Bye-bye.